The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
Amanda LaPlante. You're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. With me today is Beth Koritz. Beth is she has her master's in education. She's a licensed professional counselor, nationally certified counselor, among many other things, and she is the author of a fantastic book that has just come out. You can pick your copy up on Amazon. It's called Resilience Road, Exploring Your Authentic Life Path. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amanda. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. And so where to start with you? There are so many wonderful things that I want to talk with you about. How did you first come to want to be in counseling?
It was a long road.
Yeah.
And it was curvy with a lot of dead ends. But eventually, I got to the point in my life where I was ready to be me and do what fit me and not societal expectations. So I went back to school at the age of 48 to get my master's in counseling, graduated at 50, and went straight into private practice.
And you made that decision after some pretty trying times.
I've had a lot of those, yeah, that have been life-changing.
Yeah, and you've shared so much in this book, Resilience Road. I've loved reading it. It's so authentic and sincere and vulnerable.
Yeah, I really tell secrets that have never been told. So it's all out there for everybody to see.
What does that feel like?
It's a little scary. It's is definitely a little vulnerable. Strangers now can know things that the people closest to me didn't know at the time I was going through these things. So it was a leap to do it, but I felt like through my experiences, people could learn along with me. So once I felt like I had stories that could actually help people, then I decided to put them out there.
Is that why you wrote this book?
It is. A lot. For many, many years, people have told me I should write a book because the stories are so crazy. For one person to have so many things is kind of crazy. And there are a lot of stories that got edited out. I could do a whole nother book. There's so much more. But it just never felt like, why would anybody want to read my stories? And then when I became a therapist, and after I had a few years under my belt, and I had really devised my own philosophies and strategies that I use with my clients, I thought, now if I put those together with my stories, now my stories can help people. And if I write a book that can help people, then the book is worth writing.
So you start your book with a pretty dramatic chapter in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you are a survivor of Guillain-Barré.
Correct.
Tell us more about that disease and just share a little bit.
So Guillain-Barré syndrome, it's very rare. About 4,000 people a year get it in the United States. So when I got it, I was told, imagine Busch Stadium being full and imagine the football stadium being full back when we had one then. Combine all of those people, one of them will get Guillain-Barré. That's how rare it is. It's an autoimmune disease, and it destroys the myelin sheath around your nerves. So as the sheath around a particular nerve is destroyed, whatever muscle that nerve controls becomes paralyzed. So some people get it so weak that they might only have tingling in their palms and it might never be diagnosed. Other people get it so severely they can become completely paralyzed. And I was paralyzed from the shoulders down.
You were paralyzed from the shoulders down, and you share in the chapter in the book where you talk about this experience of being in the hospital and being wheeled down the hallway and not being able to move.
Right.
Being completely out of control of your environment, your circumstances.
It was scary, and it hit me like a brick. This was a test they gave me before they'd admitted me to the hospital. It was through the ER. They took me down. At the time, this test was performed in the basement of the hospital. I don't know why, but I was literally being wheeled.
I think mainly for horror movie effect.
It was straight out of a script. And I was being wheeled down a cinder block corridor. I could hear pans and pots clanging, so I knew I was by a kitchen. There was nothing around, and it was Memorial Day weekend. It was a Saturday, so it was probably medically a skeleton crew. And I had one orderly pushing me down this hallway. I knew, like, if I screamed, could anybody hear me? You know, it was just me and him, and I was helpless. And I've just never felt so vulnerable and alone and afraid as I did in that minute.
Well, and that was just the beginning of that journey with the disease, really, right? Because it continued to progress.
Right. It continued to progress. And by day two, I was in intensive care. And by day three, I was on life support. Because as the muscles around your lungs become paralyzed, your lungs don't work.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're there, you're in that state. And what I thought was so interesting was you were talking about how your mind still functions.
Right. So not only does your mind function, but with Guillain-Barré, even though you're paralyzed, unlike somebody who is paralyzed from a spinal injury, I could feel everything. You know, and the medical staff would forget that I didn't lose feeling. I just lost use of my muscles. So everything that was done to me, I could feel. And I got pneumonia while I was on life support. So I was getting pounded on a couple times a day to keep my lungs clear. And they had me somewhat sedated, but, you know, there's no TVs in the intensive care unit. So there's nothing to distract you. All you can do is lay there and think. And I did a lot of thinking and a lot of talking to whatever you call a higher power in the universe about what my life looked like and how it really wasn't what I wanted it to look like.
And then
when they pulled the tube out and I could talk, the first words out of my mouth to my husband at the time were, things have to change. Yeah.
And how they have.
Oh my goodness. It's like a whole different life. Yeah. And they've changed a few times over between then and now. That was 21 years ago. About 6 weeks ago, it was the 21-year anniversary of that. And I would say my life's probably turned over 3 times since then. But now I think I'm there. I think where I am now is where I'm going to remain.
Well, and I'm so glad that you're sharing the story and the journey and using all of your experiences. And I think if you write a second book, I'll read that one too. For one person, you do have a lot of stories. Mm-hmm. You've lived a lot of life.
I have. And, you know, I'm thinking that I just said to you, this is where I'm going to remain. But really, you know, for the past 7 years, I've been in practice. Well, now I'm an author. So even though I'm going to remain a therapist, my life will still continue to develop. And this book's going to take me in different directions that just the practice would take me.
Yeah. So continuing to grow and change and evolve.
Always.
As we should.
Absolutely. Who would ever want to stop?
So let's talk about, you know, you've got so many great tidbits, but let's talk about, you have this life's checklist. So tell us, what is life's checklist?
Well, what I refer to there is the society's expectations of what your life checklist would be. You know, go to school, maybe go to college, get a job, find a partner, get married, have children, buy a house. You know, it's check, 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 check. And by the way, are your friends beating you to all of that? Are they doing it bigger and better? Is that something that you need to be competing with? You know, is your body look like society expects it to be? Is your income what society expects it to be? And you're living your life checking things off, not always touching base with yourself to see if this is really what's right for you and really what is true to your authentic self.
Yeah. And so how do we reconcile that with living authentically, as you say?
Well, you have to be a little bit fearless You have to be able to say, my happiness is more important to me than what other people may think or say about me, and be willing to go out and try things and say, this wasn't right for me, but that doesn't mean I failed at it. It just means I eliminated something from one of the infinite possibilities of what I could do.
Oh, those are wise and powerful words. If I, you know, and I want to say easier said sometimes, right?
It is.
You know, depending on how we were brought up and our mindset and lots of other reasons that we get stuck in that people-pleasing pattern or stuck in that life's checklist mode.
Especially women.
Yeah.
You know, I had a new client yesterday who said, I don't understand how I got like this, where I cared more about somebody else's happiness than my own. And I said, because you have a uterus. You know, we all do that. We were raised to be pleasers, you know, and some of it's instinctual, but some of it is societal. And it's when we get to the place where we feel like taking care of ourselves is equally, if not more important than taking care of somebody else.
Yeah. And you ask a good question. So you say, what if someone doesn't know who the authentic version of them is? And I hear that, well, I see that come up a lot of times in my coaching practice. You know, I have a health coaching practice, and we'll be sitting there and talking about, you know, well, what kind of exercise do you like? Well, I don't know. My husband likes to do. No, what do you like to do? You know, or you know, I'll ask people, well, what brings you joy in life? Because one of the focuses is really just getting back to living a more joyful and balanced life.
Right.
And people don't know what brings them joy. They know what everyone else enjoys and how to bring other people joy. But a lot of times that inner part is missing.
It definitely gets lost, especially for women who are wives and mothers. It gets lost.
Yeah.
You know, just because they're so busy pleasing.
How do you bring that out?
So that's a bit of a process. It's about asking them to dig deep. You know, what brought them joy? What did they have fun doing when they were single, before they got married, maybe in high school and college? And then asking them to be willing to try new things and just try anything and everything, asking them to be really open to whatever the universe brings to them. And again, knowing that if they don't like something, it's an elimination, it's not a failure. And that can be a really fun process for them. I always ask people to write a list of their qualities. Then we talk about them and talk about the ones that they think are bad qualities.
Oh.
And how often what they think is a bad quality is really a strength, but they're choosing to look at it in a negative way.
Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, if, like, for example, if a woman says, I'm bossy, you know, I'll say, well, are you a leader? You know, are you a strong leader? Then maybe that's not a negative. Maybe you saying you're bossy just means you're a leader. And by the way, if a man said something the way you said something, would they call that bossy? Right? So that's just society's take on it. So women can start to see their negatives as positives. Sometimes there's actual negatives that they have to work on, and that's okay. But it's about them really getting to know themselves.
When you began this process of releasing life's checklist and creating your own, you know, and making life look the way that you want, what did that feel like, and what were some of the first things that you did?
Well, the first things that I did, because I had been in the hospital for 2 months, and I had been in outpatient therapy for another year, and then shortly after that, my marriage ended. So at that point, my recovery was pretty good, that I could be independent. I didn't need help anymore. And the first thing I did was I took my two daughters on a 17-day road trip, because when I came out of ICU, my goal, my number one goal, was to create memories for my kids, because that really, you know, what came to me when I was on life support was, if this was, you know, 100 years ago, I definitely would have died if it hadn't been for medical, you know, invention. So my goal was to create memories for my daughters, because you just realize you just may be gone tomorrow.
How precious life is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we did that road trip, which was insane. I don't know what I was thinking. It was crazy. But, you know, it's 20 years later, and we still talk about that trip all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm so glad that you did that. You know, I've got a 12-year-old right now, and my husband and I, it can be hard at this stage of life. You know, it's like, where do you spend the money? You know, we're still building and growing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And building our own little empire, as it were. And I can't think of any better way to invest the time or the money, though, than in those experiences together as a family, those memories, those trips, those things that you do that are adventure together,
mm-hmm.
because the bonds that form and the memories last forever.
Definitely. And the word experiences that you just said, I think that, you know, it's experiences over things, always.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. At the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. You've got another question here that I like, and it's, how do life's challenges become positives on our journey? Tell me more about what you were thinking when you wrote this question.
So I'm of the belief that everything happens for a reason. We don't always know the reason, but there is a reason.
And that can be hard. That can be hard to say, you know, when people are walking through the fire, right? It's hard to say, well, there's purpose in the flames. Because they're still getting burned.
It is.
So I love that you say that, though, because I also am a believer in that. As hard as that is sometimes to hear or to say, I believe that, too.
Mm-hmm. For me, I find that almost every major obstacle that I've had in life, it's been a self-correcting event, you know? It has pointed out to me that I was going in the wrong direction and I need to stop and take inventory and redirect. So that was definitely the case with the Guillain-Barré. The universe has a way for me, if I'm going in the wrong direction, of literally knocking me down.
Same.
I mean, I don't know if it's different for everybody, but for me, it's literally knocking me down. So 5 years ago, when I was definitely took on too much and was not being at all tapped into self-care, and I was set up to work 7 days a week for 10 weeks with 4 hours of drive time every other day, I broke my back. And boom, I was knocked completely down and out again. And it was a shame that I needed such a strong, you know, stop sign to get me to really take a look at what I was doing and self-correct. But I guess the universe knows that I need stop signs that are just that strong.
Knows what you need, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. And talk to me about, you are a certified body positive psychology counselor.
Right.
Okay. What does that mean?
Right. So body positive psychology, you know, body positivity is this movement that's been around for a while now. And it's all about learning to accept yourself. That means, like, accepting your body. And it doesn't necessarily mean loving your body, right? So that's a big ask for a lot of people, to love their body.
Yeah.
And so if we're asking them to do that and they can't, well, guess what? They see themselves as a failure as that also. So while the movement's called body positivity, we're really working more towards body neutrality. You know, our bodies are the vessels, and be grateful for what they do for us, but they don't define us. And that's really important work when I ask them to list their qualities, because women tend to like themselves or not like themselves according to what they see in the mirror. And we are not what we see in the mirror. We're every single quality that they write down on the paper, not what they see in the mirror. Whether they gain weight or lose weight, they're still the same person. So it's about unconditional acceptance and learning to honor your body, honor your hunger, having no rules at all, no restrictions, and eating what your body tells you it needs when it needs it, and stopping when you feel full. So it's Health at Every Size is something that people can look up. Linda Bacon, Health at Every Size, very science-based. All the science is in the book. And intuitive eating is the other piece of this. And I really love working with women on this, and men. I have a lot of male clients that they also have body image issues. because society and the billion-dollar diet industry has, you know, started scarring the psyche of men also.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
It's very real. You know, and I'm blessed to be where I am now with regard to my health. When I was 50 pounds heavier and really not feeling well, and, you know, I would look in the mirror and see a different face than I was used to seeing, it was really hard on my psyche.
Mm-hmm.
It did take a toll on in my identity as a person. It was hard to feel like I could be my authentic self when I didn't even recognize myself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. It is a struggle.
Yeah.
It is, and I'm going through that now. I've recently put on some weight because of a medication I'm on, and I know exactly what you mean. I'll walk by a mirror, or I'll look at the video of my book launch when I was giving the speech that just went up on social media yesterday, and I look at it, and I don't really see me, but I know me. You know, that doesn't make me love myself any less or appreciate myself any less, and that's
the goal.
It's the goal.
Yeah.
But I want to stress, it's not as easy, even for me, as I make it sound.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. 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 No, it's very real. Just learning to, just move past those societal expectations in every facet and foray is what you're all about.
Exactly. Because when you're happy, that's when you naturally care less about what other people think or say about you. Because you're happy. So who cares? Yeah.
Are you happy?
I am happy. I am.
I want to ask you also about, we talked about when we met previously, EFT and its predecessor, TFT.
Right.
Which I know we didn't necessarily plan to talk about today on the show, but I would love for you to share a little bit about that with the audience.
Sure. So thought field therapy, to speak to what you just said, EFT, which most people are familiar with, emotional freedom technique, came from TFT, which is thought field therapy. It's a tapping technique where you're tapping on the pressure points of different energy meridians. And the thought is that we store a lot of emotion in our energy meridians. So sometimes it gets blocked there. And by doing tapping techniques, we can release that block. And things that trigger us will no longer trigger us. So thought field therapy has a different tapping sequence for every issue. EFT has one tapping sequence, and you do positive and negative affirmations, and it works. Definitely it works. But TFT, because it has a different tapping sequence, depending on what your issue is, what meridian it's stored in, we can focus right in on the issue, and it works in usually one session. So it's like voodoo magic.
But it's
very powerful. It works so fast and pretty permanently. Usually people don't ever have to come back. I have some psychologists that actually send me their clients, like trauma clients, to have one session with me before they start talk therapy, because talk therapy goes so much faster after they've done a TFT session with me.
Okay, well, yeah. I may need to come to see you.
Okay.
So I think, I'm going on 3 years almost of trauma therapy for multiple things that I'm working through. And so I would love to come and try that technique.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm fascinated.
We'll do that.
So to double back, though, in addition to, you know, I feel like that was maybe a bit of a tangent for anyone that joined us late. So in addition to being an author, you are also a coach and counselor.
I am.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So in Beth Koritz Counseling and Coaching.
Right.
We'll get it right eventually, Beth. tell me a little bit about your practice, who you're working with, and what your focus is.
So first of all, I'm in Webster Groves, so I'm close by. And my practice, I work with everybody. I work with couples, men, women, and teens. I don't really work with people under the age of 13, but I love working with like 20-somethings because I feel like, ooh, I can get you before society really screws you up. Right? And we can get started off good. I do a lot of anxiety and depression work because what comes from not being happy in your life and feeling stuck and not knowing where you should turn next? Anxiety and depression. So that is a lot of what I do. I do some trauma work because I'm certified in that. And I love, love, love working with people who are ready to redefine their life. That's my dream client.
That's the best, isn't it? And then seeing people be able to remove their blocks and move forward, that's got to be incredibly satisfying.
Just having somebody come in and say, this week was so much better than last week, you know, or this month I learned, did so many new things, and here's what I learned about myself. I love that. Yeah.
So how can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out about your services?
BethKoritz.com.
Okay.
Everything's there. There's also a link to the book site, which is ResilienceRoadBook.com, but you can link it from BethKoritz.com.
Okay. And again, that book is Resilience Road, Exploring Your Authentic Life Path. And Beth, how, if people want to follow you on social media, are you on social as well?
Absolutely. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. They're both Beth Koritz, LPC. I'd love it if people would follow me in both those places. And the book has a page also that's a closed community for people who have read the book, and we are going to have discussions there, which is Resilience Road Book on Facebook.
All right. Fantastic. I can't wait to follow along.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you for being on today. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you, and I'd love to have you back again for another conversation soon.
I would love that. This was very fun.
This has been Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH LP 92.9 FM. For more information or to contact me, you can find me online at amandalaplante.com or reach out on Facebook anytime at facebook.com/getrealtoheal. You can also follow me on Instagram at @getrealtoheal. For a free consultation or with any questions about health coaching, you can also reach me at 314-583-6749. Make it a great day.